Hi everyone, welcome to the 14th episode of The Players Lounge, the tennis podcast that focuses on the mental aspect of the game. My name is Jennifer Megan. I am a former professional tennis player, and I launched this podcast because I wanted to create a space in which tennis players can find tools and solutions in order to improve their mental game, and it's also for coaches and parents who want to help those players to reach their full potential. If you like this podcast and if you want to support it, don't hesitate to leave 5 stars and to subscribe. It would really help to grow our community, and that was really the point, making sure that I can reach as many people as possible and really having those conversation around mental toughness, because I think it's something that is so important to our sport. So, hey, you can find us on Instagram at the Players Lounge Podcast, but also on Facebook. I will leave all the details in the description. That being said, let's start with today's episode. All right, Australian Open, that's a wrap. And what great 2 weeks of tennis we had. Honestly, I didn't know what to expect at the beginning of the tournament, but it was really a great tournament. We've seen a lot of amazing battles, lots of upsets, bit of fear of winning, a topic I spoke about in the previous episode. If you hadn't had a chance to listen to it yet, well, you might want to check it out. And dominance, you know, from Novak Djokovic and Naomi Osaka. And today, in this episode, I want to talk about 4 players specifically and discuss the lessons that we can learn from their performance. And these players are Naomi Osaka, Serena Williams, Daniil Medvedev, and Novak Djokovic. Let's get started! I'll want to start with Naomi Osaka. She won a 4th Grand Slam in a 4th Grand Slam final appearance, so that is already an amazing performance. She really showed that she's been the best player over the past 6 months, and it seems that, yeah, it's just the beginning. I mean, really, the way she played, especially in the semi-final and final. I think a biggest battle was against Garbini Muguruza in the 4th round, if I'm not mistaken. And what really amazed me with Naomi Osaka was how dominant she was. I think we haven't seen that on women's tennis since Serena, actually. And seeing her winning against Serena so comfortably in the semi-final really made me want to discuss how she is becoming the leader of women's tennis. But let's talk about dominance and leadership. And that's really what we can all take from Naomi Osaka's performance. And the reason why I want to talk about this is because back in 2018, when she won her first Grand Slam at the US Open, and when she afterwards became number one in the world, it seemed that the weight of carrying women's tennis, of becoming the new leader, was a bit too much for her, and then she struggled a bit for a while, and only I think find a groove back last year at the US Open. And it's really interesting because she actually discussed that. She talked about how before being a role model and an example was quite stressful to her, and how she didn't like to have that weight and that responsibility. But then she just decided that actually she didn't have to do something specific except being herself. And I've had an episode on the power of alter ego, and I think it's something that applies. And in that episode, I talked about Rafa Nadal. If you haven't listened to it, I mean, also it was a cool one. You might want to check it out. But when you look at Naomi Osaka, it's very interesting because you see how dominant she is on the court, but she has this calm confidence and determination. I mean, she is very, she is so strong, but you don't see her being like super like expensive. Is that the I think no, it's not the word, but like she doesn't show emotions, you know, that much, although she's doing it a bit more and more, but she has this quiet yet firm determination, and I find this very impressive. Like, she shows that leadership sometimes doesn't have to be loud and showing the fist every point. And I think that for the introvert players out there, the ones who are, might not be so comfortable with showing their emotions, I think definitely you can be inspired by her, because that's what she does. Like, she's not always, you know, showing a fist or screaming come on. She does it once in a while, but she definitely is determined and a big fighter. The way she saved the match points against Muguruza and she came back to win is definitely a proof of it, and how she was able to handle those break points or moments that were a bit pressuring against Jennifer Brady in the final. It was very demonstration of calm yet certain strength. So kudos to her. And when you see her then in the in the press conference, you know, she's this kind of, you know, a bit awkward and shy girl, and it's something that is quite fun to watch. And but she remains very authentic. I think it's like that's what I like the most about her, that she embraced the fact that okay, she is who she is, and that's what she said, you know, about the leadership. She is a role model by being authentic, and I think authenticity is something that we all need in general, not just in life, but being authentic to who you are is something that will definitely help you in your game. That being said, she took outside life, I mean outside tennis, she actually became very vocal on social injustice. And during the US Open, I mean, I think everyone remember when she was wearing those masks, and the set, she managed to wear the seven masks that she had planned, and then she went through and she managed to win the title. And it was something that was very important because she took a stand. And I know there is a debate in whether athletes should speak on social issues or political issues, and then some people are against it, but I think this is not the point here. The point here is that she said that before she was afraid to discuss those things and that she was kind of shying away. She gave us an example of accountability and responsibility. Taking a stand is something risky in the eyes of many, because we feel that when we take a stand, when we voice our opinions, then we are entitled to have some results. We are entitled, if I voice who I am, what I want to do, then I have to deliver. And what if I don't deliver? What if I fail? Would I look like a fool? And when she takes a stand, I mean, it's risky. In a way that, okay, maybe she's going to lose some sponsors. I mean, you never know what can happen. But by doing that, it actually gave her confidence to stand for something and to play for something bigger. And it's very interesting to see that her outside life really helped her in the game. Because in many times, especially for young tennis players, when they start winning, there is a lot of distractions and a lot of requests to do things that are external to the tennis world. And a lot of them, you know, are around entertainment. And sometimes you see players getting lost in it. With Naomi Osaka, what is interesting is that she used a platform as a tennis player to speak about an issue that she really cared about. And by taking ownership of that, it made her more confident and it gave her another reason to perform. She actually said how when she won in 2018, she was just a kid doing a thing and she was kind of trying to stay away from any controversial topic, when now she feels responsibility to just use a platform in order to raise awareness on issues. And what I'm trying to say here, I'm not trying to tell everyone to start to be political or to talk about social injustice. I mean, that's definitely not the point. If that's not something you're passionate about, well, why would you? I think that you should not do it. However, I think that what we can learn from Naomi Osaka is that caring about an issue that is bigger than tennis can really help you in your game, because by doing that, you understand that, first of all, there are bigger things than tennis. I know we all love tennis and we all passionate about the game, but there are things that are much bigger in life. And that's my point. My point is that when you find something that you really care about, that is bigger in your outside life, non-tennis life, because tennis is your life, but when you're not on the court and you manage to find something that you also deeply care about, not only it gives you another motivation in order to use your tennis to be performing so you can raise awareness on that issue, but it also help you to build your identity as a person. Now, and I've countlessly talked about how it is important to have to make sure that you are aware of your performer identity. And by performer identity, I mean when you're on a tennis player, who you are, what is your brand, I want to say, and your personal identity, which is who are you when you're not holding a tennis racket. And it is something that I will continue to talk about because I'm absolutely passionate about it, because I really believe that it is something that needs to be done, especially with young players, to understand that it is great to build champions, but it's also very important to help young players to be balanced and happy individuals. So that's the lesson that we can definitely learn from Naomi Osaka. And then you see that she is actually becoming more and more confident. It's really helping her on the court to... Yeah, she now is behaving like a leader. Like, she's that quiet leader, but she definitely is one. And she's not afraid to talk about ambitions. She said it, like, I'm here and I want to be great. And I want to win a Grand Slam when I play. I have an opportunity to do it. So kudos to her. I mean, she's a great... leader for women's tennis, and I'm very excited about what's going to happen next. Moving on to another legend of the game, Serena Williams. So first thing first, Serena is the GOAT. I mean, I'm a bit tired of this debate, whether is she or not. I think that it's not even a debate and not even a question. Serena is the greatest player of all time. Period. I mean, I definitely in a woman's game, and I even wonder sometimes if not, you know, just greatest period, you know, like her husband was wearing the greatest female cross and athlete of all time. I love that. It was really good. But there was a lot of things that we can learn from Serena's performance at the Australian Open. I think that since she came back after giving birth, to be honest, she played, according to what I saw, and I really felt that she played some of her best tennis since she came back. I really appreciated the way she was moving extraordinarily, and I mean, like she said it herself, I think it was funny, she said in conference press conference that she hasn't moved like this since like summer 1926, which I thought was funny, but I totally agree with that. The way she moved towards the, you know, during the tournament, and the way she was she was dominant. I mean, if you had a chance to watch a match against Sabalenka, definitely was a big performance, because Sabalenka is one of the players that is a serious contender to win a Grand Slam. I mean, she hasn't confirmed yet in a slam, but when you look at the tournaments outside those, she's been very dominant. She played really well, and Serena was able to put out a win. I mean, also a match against Simona Halep was also a very good performance. I mean, it took Naomi Osaka to beat her in the semifinal, and I honestly believe that if it wasn't for Osaka, she was going to win that title. And so it's hard when, and I think that it was hard to then hearing people after that good tournament. I mean, I'm not in Serena's head and I don't know her, so I'm just guessing here. But a lot of people said, oh, she got emotional because, you know, she thinks that she cannot do it, she's going to retire. There was a lot of speculation around that. I think that it was perhaps hard because whenever she's losing, we are so used to her winning that whenever she loses, everyone is like questioning her achievements and whether she should be playing. I love Roger Federer, and I've noticed that there is a difference of treatment. I mean, Federer is considered as the GOAT, although he has done less, I mean, not as good as Serena over the past couple of years. Yes, okay, I think Monday 2, he was the last one to win a Grand Slam. However, like, he hasn't made it to a lot of Grand Slam finals, and yet no one is questioning his GOAT status, and people are even saying that it doesn't matter if Djokovic wins more titles, he will never be the GOAT. So I think it's quite interesting how there is a difference of treatment, and maybe this is what got into Serena's head, because I honestly believe that the four finals that she lost, Grand Slam finals, if she would have played the way she did during the Australian Open, perhaps not in the US Open and against Osaka and Andreescu, but I definitely think that she would have won Wimbledon twice, because definitely she showed great form. And I'm very positive. I think that she can do it. I want her to do it, but I'm sure not as much as she does. But I really think that what we can learn from Serena is that she has nothing to prove to anyone. Right now, she's playing to prove something to herself. And she's just raising the bar. And that's why she keeps pushing herself, and that's why she keeps going. And where she, I think we can definitely learn from her is this ability to continue to believe in yourself despite the doubts, despite the naysayers. And that's what she's been doing a whole career. I remember when Serena Williams started, I mean, people was, and Venus, as a matter of fact, people were saying, oh, the Williams sisters are too powerful, or their game is too physical. I mean, how can you, I mean, when you think about it, how the stupidity of those comments, but whatever. And oh, for sure they will be done by 25. Well, Venus is going to be 41 this year, and Serena is going to be 40, and they are still there and competitive. Because let's be real, I mean, being in a Grand Slam final at 39 years old after giving birth, I mean, I don't think that nobody will do that ever again. So definitely Serena is the GOAT, and she's showing us that as long as you believe in yourself, you should keep going. And despite people doubting you, telling you that maybe it's time to retire, because again, she could totally retire tomorrow and then no one will have nothing to say. But she believes in herself, and she believes in her ability to do it. And for us, it's hard to believe, because most people give up after a while, and she keeps going. We're like, okay, why is she doing that to herself? Why is she torturing herself? I really think that this year she has a much better shot than all the years since she's been back. I think she's in great form, and she keeps going and believing in herself. Even perhaps she can beat Osaka in those big matches. So definitely for me, the lesson is a lesson of, I don't want to say courage, but I want to say it's really what a true champion does. They believe in themselves and they continue to go even when nobody believes in them and nobody and people, you know, write them off. So kudos to Serena, and I'm sure she will do great. I can't wait to see what's going to happen in the season. All right, moving on to Australian Open finalist Daniil Medvedev. I have to say that Daniil Medvedev is a very enjoyable player to watch. The more I see him, the more I actually enjoy. And the reason why is because he has this ability of learning very quickly. After the US Open this year, when he lost in the semis to Dominic Thiem, Medvedev went on to be very dominant in the tour until actually today and the final against Djokovic. And what is very interesting is that he's always trying to improve his game, and you never see him making the same mistake. That's what is quite interesting. That's why it was very, very exciting to see the final, because I think we all believe that today he had a real shot at the title against Djokovic, but we will talk about it more afterwards. Definitely for me the best of the so-called next gen semi-final against Stefanos Tsitsipas. I mean, was a very big demonstration of power, and I mean, apart from maybe Dominic Thiem also, but I think he showed that he is the one that we should look in next to win a Grand Slam, because he has this capacity, like I said, to learn and improving his game every single time, and he showed that he is able to handle the pressure. I mean, in the semi-final against Tsitsipas, when Tsitsipas started to play better, come back, he was able to come up with some great shots. And even the fact that, despite the fact that the crowd was heavily supporting Tsitsipas, he showed that he had character and that he knows how to use that energy, even if it's not to support him, to actually turn that into something positive, a bit like Djokovic, but I will go into more details in a few minutes. And that's something that's very interesting. And against Novak Djokovic, they have similar games. And I think this is where the problem that Medvedev is facing at the moment. They have similar games, but he understands, and I think he really knows, that Djokovic at the moment does everything a little bit better. And it must be difficult. And I think that right now he doesn't believe that he can beat Djokovic in 5 sets, in 5 hours. I think that he's still a bit doubting himself in that territory. And today we saw that a lot of things that were very interesting, and I think that he can maybe work on with his team. First of all, I want to talk about momentum. When I was in university, our coach was always telling us this: when you are winning, see playing as driving a car. When you are winning, it means that you have the green light, so you keep going, you keep going. You start making mistakes, okay, this is the yellow light, you slow down. And when you see that you're making a lot of mistakes, that your opponent is really taking over, that's red light, that's when you stop. And when you pause and you break the momentum. And today, I think this is what Daniil Medvedev didn't do so well. At 6-5, he kind of rushed his game, and when Djokovic was little by little putting more pressure on him, he was not able to slow down the momentum, rush his serve. Of course, Djokovic was returning better. And after that, he kind of lost himself and rushed his serve. There was a very interesting stat at some point. They showed the amount of time that both players were taking between points, and you could see that Daniil Medvedev on average was taking 18 seconds between points, when Djokovic was taking 26 seconds. And we know that we've been talking about how Djokovic and Nadal are taking like so much time between points, but I think like it would have been good for Medvedev to slow down the pace, because he was definitely in the red light and he kept going, and it resulted in a lot of mistakes, and he got pissed off and he got very angry at some point. He broke a racket because he could not understand and he could not find a way to stop stop that. And then with Djokovic, when you do that, he doesn't need that much. When you show him that you're nervous, he really preys on that, and then you don't see him again. I mean, the match is over. And I've talked about how sometimes you need to step back and look at your opponent to see signs of, you know, maybe doubt and things like that. And actually, there was an opportunity for Medvedev in the beginning of the second set when he broke Djokovic's serve. Djokovic was annoyed, and you could feel that he was ready to, I mean, not to explode, but he was getting very annoyed. And because Medvedev perhaps was thinking about this first set that he lost, didn't see that, the opportunity, and he didn't actually use that in order to, you know, start over in the second set, because he really had an opportunity to maybe like say, okay, I broke her right away, so I'm back in the game and let me believe in myself. So I think this is where Djokovic is better in terms of experience and in terms of game. And that's a pity, but I'm sure that he can find the tools in order to know how to bring momentum. Like I said, for me, you can just like, when you are in that situation, when you're losing a lot of points, hey, go back to maybe take more time between points. Of course, he has to stay in the legal amount of time that you have, but take the maximum of time to regroup and to reconnect with your game plan, or to change your game plan. And for me, the next step for Medvedev is to find a plan B, what to do when things are not going his way, especially against Djokovic, to really find a tactic, because right now they play similar games and he can do it in a best to three set matches, but it seems that in a five setters he still needs to find other solution in tennis wise in order to have a chance to win a Grand Slam. And like Djokovic said in the ceremony presentation, the trophy ceremony, he is going to be there for a few years. So I think that's what Daniil Medvedev needs to do. But definitely he has a shot to be a Grand Slam winner. He had such an amazing run, and he should definitely not be upset. But I know that he will go back to work, because that's what I like about this player, is that he goes back and then he comes back always stronger. So I can't wait to see him for the rest of the season. All right, we are going to finish strong with Novak Djokovic. All right, so he won his 9 titles at the Australian Open, which is an amazing achievement, and 18 Grand Slam total. Definitely back in the race of who's going to win the Grand Slam titles between Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. That is first of all exciting on the historic side. But now I really want to talk about the mental performance of Djokovic throughout the tournament. After the semi-final, in an interview, he sent a really clear message. He said that he's not ready to handle anything to those guys from the next gen. And it was a very, and I was watching the interview and I was like, wow, you could really feel that he was like, no way. If you guys want to win those Grand Slam, you're going to have to come and take it. I'm not going to make it easy for you. And of course, you know, it might sound a bit arrogant, but I like to see players to actually be real. It's refreshing. And it was very interesting, because when you do that, you put pressure on yourself. But Djokovic is definitely used to handle the pressure, so I don't think it was a big deal. But it definitely played a role in Medvedev. Like, he knew that, okay, I'm going to have to really put my A game, because this guy is not going to give me anything. So that was a smart play, to play a bit of mind games before the final. So again, that performance, why I think that this win is such a, it's so amazing in terms of performance, is because Djokovic had a had a rough year, I want to say. I mean, we all remember the US Open accident, but before that there was the Adria Cup scandal, and it seemed drained. at the end of last year, it seemed very drained and fed up with everything. I mean, even at the final of French Open against Rafa, he was completely like out of gas. And then you know, we saw that he was at the Master Cup. He was not himself. So he took the time to recover. And then at the beginning of the quarantine, again, he received a lot of backlash for after his letter to Tennis Australia. So that was like, that's a lot to take. And after his match against Taylor Fritz in the third round, and people questioned whether he was being really injured or was faking it. And I think a lot of it comes from his early days on tour, when sometimes we were not sure if he was not a bit faking and stuff. But I feel like right now Djokovic is the tennis villain that the fans need, and it doesn't matter what he does, people are going to be against him. And so it's a bit, sometimes it's a bit difficult. But I want to refocus now on his performance of today. And what I really want to emphasize in the lesson that we can learn is that how you can, you know, take the lead over your opponent by breaking their strength, and how to use adversity. So first of all, I made an episode on Novak Djokovic in which I talk about shock empathy, how he's like the greatest of all time at shock empathy. What I meant by that was that Djokovic has the ability to sense whenever you are feeling a bit down, and to identify the opponent's weaknesses and to really use that to win. But today, he took it to another level. During the tournament, Medvedev had been impeccable with his serve. He had so many free points thanks to his amazing serve. His backhand is definitely one of the greatest of the game. And today, Djokovic really prepared himself to break those two strengths. And we saw that especially at 6-5, how he made an extra effort to return those serves. Djokovic today was very, very good at returning. And he actually talked about it after the match, how he really focused on being good at prepared himself to return Daniil Medvedev's serve and to make sure that he was going to give him an extra shot. And we could see that throughout the game, how he was returning well, very deep to the middle, and putting really, really, really a lot of pressure after Medvedev's serve, which resulted in Medvedev forcing and not being as efficient on his serve. So first of all, that is a lesson that we can learn, how you can identify your opponent's strength and try to break that. Because when you take away their strength, then they start to feel less confident and make more mistakes. And then on the backhand side, we saw a lot of backhand to backhand rallies in which Djokovic was literally sending that message that, hey dude, I don't care that you have an amazing backhand, I'm going to show you that I'm the boss here. I'm going to show you that I am not afraid of your backhand, and I'm going to like hit the ball, you know, cross court to it, because I'm not afraid of it. Which resulted in Medvedev trying to be more aggressive with his forehand and making more mistakes. So that was a very big lesson that we can learn here. You can break your opponent's confidence by attacking their own strength. Sometimes we always focus on the weaknesses, but that's also a very big, I think this is an even more impactful mental strategy. When you feel confident and you are, okay, you know that you can do it, go for it. So that was lesson number one. Then lesson number two, and I've talked about it before, it's Djokovic's ability to deal with negativity. I think that this guy gets so much backlash. This is the Djokovic bashing. Sometimes I think is a bit too much, that no matter what he does, no matter what he says, people are gonna hate and people are gonna say that he's a bad guy. And the Australian Open was no different. He sent a letter to, I mean, there was a whole controversy that I think I'm sure you guys all know about, after he sent a letter to Tennis Australia to ease up the quarantine for the players, and only few players came to his defense, but most of the people were against it. So that's one thing. But then, again, Djokovic has this ability to use negativity even when the crowd is against him to play his best tennis. And after the match, he said something very interesting, you know, when he was asked about how he was able to deal emotionally with all the backlash. He was very honest about it. He said that, okay, it's not easy. Because at the end of the day, we all humans, and of course we want to be accepted and loved, and I think it must be hard for Djokovic, whether you like him or not. I mean, if we just speak on the human level, a human being level, it's hard when you get so much, negative feelings towards yourself. But he used a very important term. He said that I had to lock myself in a shell and to focus on my goals, on what I have to do, on my recovery, and that's it. And then in the trophy ceremony, he thanked his team for, you know, being there with him and for the energy. And that is something that is very important. You know, when you are facing that much negativity, there are not much things that you can do. But Djokovic is showing us that what you can do is what he means by locking yourself in a shell is focusing on what you need to do, forgetting about the external noise, and to remain focused, obsessive. That's why he looked so tired at the during the ceremony, and I was like, okay, what's wrong with this guy? He just won a Grand Slam, but it seemed a bit like tired, and I think it was not because of the game. It was just about like, okay, now I can relax. And he said it like, I need a break. And the mention of this team is also something that I really pay attention to, because it's hard to do this on your own, and this is why it is so important to have a team around you that is supportive and who brings you positive energy. Because when you are facing those moments, and it's not just like the backlash, you know, from the press, but negativity or people doubting yourself, again, you want to make sure that the people around you are aligned with your goals. Otherwise, it's not possible to do it. It's very hard. So what we can learn from Djokovic today in terms of mental lesson was definitely, number one, to use some your opponent's strength to actually attack them in terms of tennis strategy. And when you manage to break their confidence by attacking their strength, then it makes it much easier for you to get the win. And again, to use negativity as something that you can just forget about and be focused on your goals. When you're dealing with negativity or bad feelings, just focus on your goal and remain very focused and use your team as full support. All right, that's a wrap. I hope that you enjoyed the episode. I really wanted to just talk right away after the tournament to do a wrap up, because I really enjoyed the tournament. So definitely, if you enjoyed that episode, don't hesitate to subscribe again and to give us 5 stars. It will really help us. And until next time, well, have fun and take good care of yourself. Bye.